Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ Volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello, this is Nature Now, brought to you by KPTZ Port Townsend. This is Mary Robson. In the first week of July, we hope for sunny weather, blue skies, fresh cherries, and long summer evenings. Today, we'll talk with Annika Wallendahl about fossils found locally, but first, the mystery sound. This is not a bird. It has 4 feet and makes some interesting sounds. Now for some observations. Thanks to Charlie Fleshman for helping me read and for engineering us through this show.
The chorus frog, small, about 1/2 inch. Adults can grow to about 2 inches. This one recently metamorphosed from a tadpole. Perhaps it will get larger and live safely over winter to be part of next spring's peeper music.
That's one of the great sounds of spring. Ocean spray. This is a native shrub. It is nearly invisible most of the year. Ocean spray bursts into frothy bloom in late June and July, which it's doing right now. The common name is apt. White blossoms carried at the ends of stems resemble sea foam. Its botanical name is Holodiscus discolor. A graduate student at the UW once wrote about the possibility of cultivating it as a nursery plant for gardens. Some people plant it as a native, but it is generally wild. It is a good pollinator plant for native bees and bumblebees. Another common name, ironwood, refers to the hardness of the branches. They were used by the natives for digging sticks, spears, and even nails. It's hard to imagine a wood hard enough to fasten together two other pieces of wood, but ocean spray can do it.
Bird egg shape. New research measuring egg shape found a correlation between the flying ability of certain birds and their eggs, often elliptical. The premise is that the bird must stay somewhat lean to fly well, and the elliptical shape packs in nutrients while still allowing a slender bird shape. The common murre, a powerful flyer, has eggs this shape. So does the least sandpiper. The New York Times printed this information.
And bird behavior while fishing. Off Point Hudson, I saw a seabird stop flying and begin looking down. There was very little air movement. The bird held still, watching. Suddenly it dove. It was startling to see its stillness and concentration. From the distance, it seemed to have a dark back and white underparts, and as a guess, it may have been a kingfisher, which does watch for prey either from a perch or by hovering before diving. Kingfishers stay here locally year-round, and the still water off Point Hudson gave it excellent hunting visibility. We are going to talk with Annika Wallendahl again. Annika is a geologist, a science writer, and a student of local rocky happenings. Today we'll talk about fossils, their finds, their history here, and I found this quote: Thomas Jefferson thought that mastodons and other extinct animals might be found by the Lewis and Clark expedition. There was a lot of talk about what would be out in the West. They weren't, of course, but the discoverers crossed excellent fossil country. And I read this in Undaunted Courage. So we're going to just start at the beginning. There was a recent finding of part of a fossil mammoth. Too late to tell Thomas Jefferson, but what happened anyway?
Well, I read about it in the Peninsula Daily News, and there was a mammoth molar that was found on a public beach in Squim.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So there was 2 beachwalkers, and they found a 10-pound molar.
Someone must have identified it as a molar because they may not have known when they picked it up.
Right. They were looking for beach rocks, and it's okay to collect on that particular beach, looking for petrified wood, and they found what they thought looked fossil-like. And in early May, they took it to the Burke Museum and had some assistance identifying it. And it turned out to be the molar of a Columbia mammoth.
The Columbia mammoth is recently, how old would that have been? With an educated guess, roughly.
Well, the Burke Museum thought it was 18 to 20,000 years old, and it was a molar from a 35 to 40-year-old adult.
My goodness. We can be glad we don't have 10-pound molars, but I'm interested that things can still emerge out of a sand or a bluff, and there are some other famous finds. You mentioned a whale that was discovered in Port Angeles.
Yeah, so in 1993, there was a 6-meter-long fossil whale, and it was found by a local mineral collector and lifelong fossil hunter, John Cornish. It was amazing just because it was very complete, and it was found in the Pisht Formation.
All right, carry on about the Pisht Formation.
It's a marine geologic mm-hmm. unit, and it contains gastropods, snail shells, but this whale fossil was exceptional because it's the world's first toothless fossil whale.
Toothless fossil whale.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's a baleen whale.
Okay, so it was somewhere in whale archaeology or somewhere in the evolution of the whale as it came forward. We have baleen whales now, so 25,000 years or so.
And 23 million.
What? Oh, yeah. My goodness. that whale just got a lot older.
I know. We got in the Wayback Machine and went way back.
Wayback Machine. Okay. And then in this particular case, what happened to this whale fossil?
John Cornish donated the find to the Burke Museum. I believe it traveled to the Smithsonian for study. And I don't know if it's on display right now at the Burke Museum, but he found it in 1993. And then in 2016, it was determined that it was a new species.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was named after him. And it's called the Sitzquawk Cornichurum. So it was named in his honor.
Okay, the Sitzquawk Cornichurum is now somewhere at the Smithsonian or between the Smithsonian and the Burke. What does a fossil hunter look for? I mean, you'd say you're just marching down the beach, enjoying the day. Is there something about the terrain? Is it blind luck? How does it work when someone's hunting?
Well, for fossils, I think your best luck is to hunt in areas where there's eroding bluffs.
Okay.
Fossils typically break down much quicker than the surrounding rocks, granites.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And in some cases, we also have clay and silt in areas on bluffs, for example. Yeah. So the fossil might not break down as fast in that area. I'm hoping to go out and find a whale this afternoon, yeah. But I want to know what I'm looking for.
If you want to see a mammoth molar with your own eyes so you know what to look for, you can visit the Nordland General Store.
This is a famous one, isn't it?
In 1997, local Maristone resident found mammoth molar on East Beach, and it's there on display.
Was
on the
it
shelf.
Still in the jaw?
I think it was just the molars.
Oh, okay.
And then it was eroding out of the cliff there. So.
Okay. So now at least we know that where mammoths are concerned, the molars seem to last longer than other parts of the mammoth.
Yeah.
I don't know. So it's in the Nordland store. It must have been found somewhere that was not on government property, right?
Yeah. It was found, I believe, on East Beach, County Beach.
Okay. So there it sits. And those of you who like to get ice cream at the Nordland store might open your eyes and look for the mammoth molar. And you said something else was discovered in that same area later. Was it bears? Two bear skulls? Or?
Oh, so I've heard that there was two bear skulls found on Whidbey Island.
Oh, on Whidbey.
On the
okay.
beach there.
So we're going way back and way over at this point.
Yeah, but those are more of the glacial era. So they're, I believe those ones are less than 50,000 years old. But okay. It was unusual in that there was a bear skull, fossil skull, found on the beach. And then I think a year or two later, more researchers from the UW were in that area. And they found, I believe it was the UW, but they found another skull weathering out in the same spot. So why there was two relatively rare fossil bear skulls.
Well, some of them have been found in caves in Europe. There was a certain amount of, I think, bear appreciation or even worship by some of the older people. So maybe those two bears had been found and collected and settled down in the same place and then washed out on Whidbey.
It's possible.
So, The skulls, the heavy bones, the teeth, those seem to last longer than other things that you might be looking for in the fossil world, right?
Yeah, I think first off, it's easier to spot a larger fossil than a smaller one. But then they're just, as far as weathering and goes on the different surfaces or chemical degradation, there's less surface area per volume on a larger fossil than on a smaller
one. Right, so you're left with more even when it started to weather. I know 10,000 years ago seems like a long time, but some of these fossils really, really go back. You talked about some quite older ones near Salt Creek.
Yeah, and so near the Twin Rivers area, and again, this is getting into the Pisht Formation, which is spelled in a really interesting way.
It's, well, spell it.
P-Y-S-H-T.
Pisht. It sounds like what you would say when trying to attract a bird or a mammal.
Yeah.
Pisht, pisht, pisht. Come, come, come. But in this case, we're trying to attract fossils. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's what you use to attract geologists.
Okay.
So I was out walking the Twin Rivers area, the beach there. A friend that I was out collecting with found an agatized clam, which...
Wow.
It's a fossil clam where the inside is replaced with agate. And actually, inside the agatized clam, there was still liquid and a bubble. And that's called an anhydroagate.
Oh, my goodness.
So it was a time capsule of the atmosphere and marine water at the time that the agate filled the area. So
my gosh. And this is way back, way, way back.
Yeah, so 30 to 50 million years old.
We had talked a little bit about one of the things that is so entrancing about fossils. Children love them. Finding something that connects you to way back time is, it's so rare that you can hold something in your hand and say, this was alive 50 million years ago. What's the process for agatizing? I didn't ask you this before. I'm just curious. I know there's an agate beach in Oregon where people find a lot of agate.
As you deposit sediments, marine sediments, clams, let's take a present-day beach. If you have area where deposition's occurring, the sediments get deeper and further down you get heat and increased pressure, but then you also get fluids, groundwater flowing through there, and if the groundwater happens to be rich in silica, it'll deposit on it, much like you would see deposition in your water pipes at home from... it's the same process.
Okay, but it's gradual and... In this case, the shell of the clam remained?
In the one that I saw, the agate filled in the shell, and then because the shell was not as resistant, it eroded away.
Oh, okay. So, but you could see the shape of the shell.
Yeah.
On the outside of the agate.
Yeah. It's, have you ever seen one of those chocolate Easter eggs where they fill chocolate inside the egg?
Yes.
It was exactly like that, only instead of a yummy chocolate center, it was an agate, hard agate.
Hard agate.
Hard agate candy center.
And you can also find in that same area some, in the Pisht Formation, some gastropod shells too? Are they... A gastropod is related to a mollusk, related to even a slug, yes?
Yeah, I think of gastropod being generic snail. So snails of different species and sizes. The largest one that I've seen was kind of that typical curly snail shell.
Yes.
And it was 2 or 3 inches, and it was just beautiful. The shell was preserved, the white shell, but it had like a dusting of, it was pyritized, so it had fool's gold.
Sparkly.
Yeah.
That's the little kid princess shell.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's so interesting. So how are fossils dated? Is it by where they're found, more or less, that the geology of the area is known a little bit and you can tell by approximately, or is it kind of a guess, or... Guessing is not scientific.
Estimation.
Okay.
Now, so once you have established dates for different geologic units in an area, you can generally say how old a fossil is if you find it still embedded.
If it hasn't been turned or moved.
And then when you have carbon, you can you can do radiocarbon dating. If there's mineral zircon in there, you can use isotope dating.
Okay,
so there's lots of different chemistries.
And dating it is much more precise than it used to be. Yeah. Because we have so many techniques. You also mentioned a velociraptor on Susha Island. This is a small, very old dinosaur.
This was really exciting because I didn't know that until I came across the article about it that we had Cretaceous dinosaur age mm-hmm. fossils here in Washington State. I wasn't familiar with that.
And the Cretaceous age is what, 85 to 70 million years ago, roughly?
Yeah, like the age of dinosaurs and all that, Jurassic so, World.
What part of this Velociraptor did they find? It's not a big dinosaur. We're not talking about a Brontosaurus, right?
No, I think Velociraptors are usually, I want to say, less than 2 meters.
Okay.
Maybe 3 meters or smaller, but this one was found on Susha Island in the San Juan Islands.
Uh-huh.
And again, it was through research with the University of Washington. They classified it as a theropod, and uh-huh. that's the family that includes the velociraptor, the okay. predatory,
fast-moving. So those of you who love dinosaurs, this is your moment. Enough of it so that they could tell what it had been when it was alive.
Yeah, and they have the Burke Museum has some great photos of the actual fossil removal process,
oh,
the beach where they
wonderful.
Found it, and then it's laid out, and they've put the reconstruction together, mm-hmm. so if you just visit the Burke Museum website and Google either Susha Island or theropod, it should pop up.
Therapod, which is not something you take if you have the flu. It is the name of a group of dinosaurs. We talked a little bit about things which are not quite fossils, but represent life in an area. Shell middens?
These are considered archaeological sites.
Okay.
With native populations, it's the place where beach shells or oyster shells, clam shells were cast mm-hmm. off and piled. And it represents where people lived. Mm-hmm. And I have stumbled across a few of them on beach walks. And I just find it amazing and
awesome.
Stop and take
you
a breath.
Stop and say, wow, there were people having food, throwing the shells. They must have put them all in one place for a reason, but maybe tidiness, I'm not sure. Keep a tidy camp.
Yeah, and I mean, think to our Western civilization, what do we look for history and structures mm-hmm. and very much building up on the landscape
sure.
and terraforming and with a lighter footprint on the environment. It's one of the few markers that mm-hmm. are identifiable, and of course mm-hmm. they're protected, so you know you can't touch them, and typically because they're a protected archaeological site, they won't be published where the locations are. But
you'd also mentioned that in addition to shell middens, which are fascinating, there are petroglyphs which also represent recent civilization, and people are very quiet about where those are found, right?
I think it all comes back to people stealing them and moving them.
Or messing up, deciding to add their own calligraphy to what the petroglyph said.
Probably one of the most, and it's this is a well-known location, if you do the Ozette Loop hike on the Olympic mm-hmm. Peninsula, there are petroglyphs that have eroded and are exposed on the beach. So you walk right by them there. And I mean, it's just, the artwork is beautiful. And then the knowing that you're standing where there's been thousands of years of history.
And someone standing saying, I want to put this on this rock. That's that's quite amazing. The natural history museums and people who study rely on fossils to get themselves back to 85 million years ago. There's no way to do it other than that. That's all we've got, right? There's no pottery. There's no fallen down log houses. There's nothing, just what the fossils have left.
It's definitely a visual window back in time. It's mm-hmm. striking, especially when you see a fully constructed dinosaur in a natural history museum.
I'm thinking of the one named Sue that is in Chicago. It's quite amazing. But it's also possible for people now, just as you can reconstruct a human face from a skull, that you can then reconstruct the musculature, the size, the whole effect of the animal from seeing parts of fossils. So If we had to take the fossils out of the museums, the way some of the museums are having to send things back that they shouldn't have, the natural history museums have fossils. They belong there. And studying them is a life work for people. I think it gets children interested in what's going on in the land probably faster than anything else in a museum.
I remember growing up, we used to go to the Pacific Science Center in Seattle, and they had a dinosaur exhibit, and it was like animatronics.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing. You would walk through the dinosaur room, and they'd be moving, and it was a great experience. And of course, they had a lot of science to go with it and a lot of learning.
Right.
It was great.
There's an exhibit in a children's museum somewhere, and I have forgotten it, maybe Boston, which has salted a sand pile with certain fossils, small ones that are not exactly what you would expect to find in a sand pile, but children can dig for them. And it's absolutely delightful. They won't let the parents dig, but the children get to dig. Anyway, hooray for fossils and for the area here that has given us so much that we can study and learn about. We have, as much as we could, brought a little bit of the past to life. If you want to go and stare at Fort Worden, there's always a place to look there. Keep at it, right?
Yeah, the peat are plant fossils.
That isn't the pished layer, so don't worry. It's a peat layer. Annika, thank you very much for making the past come alive again. It's exciting and fun, and now we can look at something besides our feet when we're walking on the beach. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
I enjoy it. Thanks. The mystery sound is a weasel. Here, it is likely to be a long-tailed weasel. They have been reported twice in the last 2 weeks on Maristone Island. One was under a porch of a newly built house. The house owner said that the birds were yelling alarms, and rightly so. Weasels are absolute carnivores. I don't think you can get one to eat a berry. And they will often capture a rodent in its burrow. The long, slender weasel shape makes entering a burrow easier. That's why a weasel is built the way it is. Sometimes the weasel moves into the now empty burrow after dispatching the owner. To keep up energy, weasels have to eat a third of their weight daily. They are fierce for their size, and one writer said, "Be glad bears don't have the metabolism of weasels." Finally, a few events. On Saturday, July 8th, the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society, which has been doing a series of getting acquainted with birds. This is from 10 to 12 noon, Saturday, July 8th. Seabirds and Shorebirds with Bob Bokelhide. Also, volunteers are still needed for care of the Kulkahan Native Plant Garden. The location is 9884 State Route 19, Chimicum, and Becca Bloom at becca4nativeplants@gmail.com can help you get more information about that. That's it for Nature Now, the first week of July. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic, live, and eclectic reports. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays with repeats here on KPTZ, on Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the website at www.kptz.org.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Mr. Big Stuff, performed by Kermit Ruffins and Rebirth Brass Band.